We are up to Perek Aleph Mishnah Dalet of Maseches Yevamos, and if you remember the first Mishnah that we did of the Masechta, it talks about the case of how a co-wife can matir, can exempt another co-wife from the obligation of Yibum or Chalitza, because if you have one co-wife who is an erva to the brother who they are going to do Yibum or Chalitza with, then she can exempt everyone else from doing Yibum or Chalitza as well. We took this for granted, however, we just assumed that this was the halacha, but not everyone agrees to this. That's the halacha that we follow, but it's actually machlokas, and that's what Mishnah Dalet talks about. Mishnah Dalet says as follows: Beishamai matirin hatzaros lachim, that Beishamai permitted the co-wives of an erva to the brothers, meaning the brother can perform yibum or chalitza. So even if he's the only living brother, so she can't marry others minimally without chalitza. So she must get chalitza. In other words, she could do yibum as well, but chalitza isn't necessary. Which according to Beis Hillel, not only is yibum out of the question, but chalitza is also out of the question because it doesn't make any sense because he has they have no business, they have no real connection in that way. Beis Hillel Ostrom of Beis Hillel forbid the co-wives to the brother, if there's only one living brother, then they can marry others even without chalitza, and that's what the first Mishnah follows. So again, Beis Hillel says that you can't do yibum or chalitza, and Beis Shammai says you can do yibum, and you must at the very least do chalitza. Chaltzu, if one of the co-wives of the erva did do chalitza with the living brother, then what happens? So Beis Shammai poslin min kahuna. So Beis Shammai say that she is pasul from kahuna. That would pasul her from kahuna, because if a woman who has chalitza will be pasul from kahuna. Who Beis Hillel machshir, but Beis Hillel say no. This chalitza is meaningless because it was unnecessary, so therefore she can actually still marry a kohen. Another consequence of all of this is nisyabmu. Let's say one of the co-wives was taken by this second brother, this living brother, in Yibum, and then he died. Beis Shammai machshir, and Beis Shammai say that she still is eligible to marry a kohen because this Yibum was a permissible Yibum. So they had marital relations, and that makes a lot of sense that they could because it was Yibum. Beis Hillel poslin, but Beis Hillel say no, she cannot marry a kohen. Why? Because this Yibum was a forbidden relationship, in their opinion. And the woman, as we know, who has marital relations with a man that she's forbidden to is going to be considered a zona and therefore not allowed to marry a kohen. Unbelievable. So now, as unbelievable as this might be, you'll say, fine, so Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel could not have anything to do with one another. Says the Mishnah, Aval Pisha Ilu Osrin of Ilu Matsirin, even though Beis Hillel forbid the co-wife to the brother and Beis Shammai permit her to him, Elu Postin Ve'ilu Machshirin, and even though one side of the argument they disqualify some women from marrying Kohanim, while the other side would consider them eligible to marry Kohanim, Lo Nimnu Beis Shammai Milisa Nashim Beis Hillel, still they had allowed marriages between the two groups. Beis Shammai did not stop from marrying women of Beis Hillel, Velo Beis Hillel Mi Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel did not stop from marrying Beis Shammai. What would they do? So they were just basically, they trusted each other. They knew that they disagreed, but they trusted that they would be honest. So they would just tell each other about the women that they could not marry, that would be baser according to their perspective, and they just wouldn't marry them. But everyone else, 95% of the women could be married and was totally permissible to marry. And it concludes the Mishnah and the Perek. Kol taharos v'atumos shayu ilu mitarin v'ilu mitamin. Even though there were many things that there are many Torah items and tummy items that one side would say that they're Torah and the other side would say they're tummy and vice versa. Nonetheless, lo nimnu osim taharos ilu al gabe ilu. Each side didn't like stop themselves from preparing Torah foods on kelim that they would bother from the other side because they would just basically tell each other if these kelim that they were borrowing are considered tummy or Torah and they wouldn't prepare any food on them. So basically, it's beautiful. You see how the two groups were able to interact and live together and live amongst each other even though they had halachic disagreements that were fundamental. Nonetheless, they just danced around them and they avoided them, but they were able to live together in unison in that way, which was obviously a very beautiful thing. Ilu ve'ilu divrei Elokim chaim. So that was the end of Perek Aleph. Now we'll just do the first Mishnah of Perek Beis. So Perek Beis, Mishnah Aleph. So we're going back again to the first Mishnah. You'll see that this is a fundamental Mishnah that it seems to be guiding us throughout the entire Masechta thus far. We keep referring back to it. So if you remember, one of the cases we had was a brother who falls to Yibum to a wife of his other brother who passed away, but it turns out he also had another brother who came before him who was originally married to this woman, or at least one of her co-wives, and he was never alive at the same time. So there were three brothers, brother A, brother B, brother C. Brother A was married, brother B then did Yibum and Chalitza, and then brother C was born at some point after brother A had died. So says the Mishnah, what is exactly this case where the wife of a brother, whose world he did not share, what is this case that he exempts the koi from Chalitza and Yibum, as we had in the first Mishnah? So we know this, but we'll say it, we'll have Mishnah to explain it now. Shnei Achim, he had two brothers, Umeis Achad Mehem, and one of them died, but Nolad Elahen Ach, and then another brother was born, and then the second brother, who was living when the first brother died, he did Yibum with his brother's wife, so he had two wives now. He had his original wife, and he had his brother's wife who had passed away, who he did Yibum with, but then he also dies, again without children, so he leaves two widows, so neither of these women require Yibum or Chalitza with the youngest brother, because the first wife was wife to the first brother when the third brother was not alive yet, and therefore she's always going to be prohibited to him to even do Yibum or Chalitza. Harishona yotzeis mishum eishes achiv shelo haya b'olamo. The first wife, the one who had been married to the first brother, goes out. She's patera because she's exempt because of she is toward the youngest brother. This idea of the wife of a brother whose world that he did not share, which makes her an erva to him. And the second wife goes out on account of being the co-wife of this erva. And then finally, the Mishnah concludes. Another case that asa ba ma'amar. So let's say you have a situation in which what we call a ma'amar was accomplished. So just to explain this a little bit outside, there are two aspects of yibam. On a biblical level, all the couple has to do is just to marry one another, is to do yibam. We know that in a regular marriage, not yibam or chalitza, but just a regular marriage of a man and a wife, there are two biblical aspects. There is kiddushin and nisuin. However, when it comes to the biblical aspect of yibam, there is just yibam, just the marital relations aspect of it. However, the rabbis made up something called a ma'amar. A ma'amar is like a declaration that the man says that he's going to marry the woman, and they say that he should do this before. It's an act of betrothal declaration, and so he has to do this before the yibam actually takes place, before the relations take place. So let's say again that what happens is asa ba ma'amar. Asa ba ma'amar. If the second brother performed a ma'amar with the first brother's wife, and he had another wife as well, Vamis, and then he dies without doing any Yibam. So he did the first rabbinic part, but he didn't do the Torah aspect, the Doraisa part. Hashniyah Chaletzis, and the second wife, the full wife of the second brother, right? So she does Chalitza with the youngest brother, below Mesiyah Bemes, but she doesn't do Yibam. Why is this? So again, from a biblical point, they are married, but from a rabbinic point, they are not married. So this is a very awkward fusion. This is how we explain it all. Since the ma'amar wife never had Yibam, and she was not married to the second brother under biblical law, so the full wife can undergo Yibam because the ma'amar wife is considered to have been partially married to her husband. And since the ma'amar wife was an erva to the youngest brother, so the full wife is partially going to be a co-wife of an erva to him, and then she's going to be forbidden for Yibam. But since the ma'amar wife was never fully married to the second brother, or it was only a rabbinic marriage, so she can't exempt the full wife from her Yibam bond to the youngest brother, and therefore the full wife has to do chalitza to remove any semblance of a connection, but the Yibam is not permissible because of the rabbinic connection that the co-wife who was an erva had with the brother right before he passed away. That brings us to the end of the first Mishnah of the second Perek. God willing, next time we'll continue with Mishnah Beis in Perek Beis, but for now we will stop right here.